The husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi beaten with a hammer in his home.
The attacker said he was looking for the speaker herself, and he fractured the skull of 82-year-old Paul Pelosi.
I'm Aisha Roscoe.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Enough is enough is enough. Every person of good conscience needs to clearly and unambiguously stand up against the violence in our politics.
We have the latest on what, unfortunately, is just the latest act of political violence.
And Brazil's presidential campaign ends tomorrow. We'll hear more from the scene itself.
And he made his bid, then walked it back, then got sued into buying Twitter. Elon finally sealed the deal. So stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend. And we begin with the investigation into the attack on Paul Pelosi. It happened in the pre-dawn hours of Friday morning after a break-in at his and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home.
Authorities say the intruder is a 42-year-old man, David DePepe. He is in custody. Mr. Pelosi underwent what doctors say was successful surgery. NPR congressional correspondent Deidre Walsh joins us. Deidre, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Let's begin with Friday morning. What, at the moment, do we know about what happened?
San Francisco police say Mr. Pelosi was the one who actually called 911 early Friday morning. Police Chief William Scott credited a dispatcher with sensing something was wrong and sending help quickly. The chief said when officers arrived, they found DePepe and Mr. Pelosi inside the home, both holding a hammer. DePepe pulled the hammer away from Mr. Pelosi and assaulted him with it. He was struck at least once. DePepe broke into a rear door to enter the home, and Chief Scott said last night he was targeting the home.
This was not a random act. This was intentional.
According to a source briefed on the investigation, DePepe was specifically looking for the speaker and told me when he entered the home, he confronted Paul Pelosi and asked, "Where's Nancy? Where's Nancy?" Mr. Pelosi, who, like the speaker, is 82 years old, was taken to the hospital. He underwent successful surgery to repair a skull fracture and serious injuries to his right arm and hands. Drew Hamill, a spokesman for the speaker, says Mr. Pelosi is expected to make a full recovery.
At the moment, what do we know about the suspect?
Well, the police are still investigating the motive. DePepe is being charged with multiple counts, including attempted homicide, assault, elder abuse. In these cases, investigators often look at social media postings to try to figure out a motive. NPR has reviewed social media accounts for a man with a similar name as DePepe, and they include anti-Semitic tropes and false claims about the 2020 election, also misinformation about the COVID vaccine. But right now, we just don't have much official information from law enforcement about any specific links to Pelosi.
And where does the investigation go from here, Deidre?
Well, the FBI, the U.S. Capitol Police, and San Francisco Police have a joint threat investigation. You know, it's worth mentioning all the top leaders from both parties have security details assigned by the Capitol Police. But the speaker was in Washington with her security team when this attack happened, so they were with her, not her husband. The San Francisco Police noted last night that the Capitol Police are in charge of security at the residence in San Francisco, so there's going to be a lot of questions about how DePepe got in.
And threats against leaders and other members of Congress have been on the rise, haven't they?
They have. They've really gone up dramatically recently against lawmakers from both parties. You know, 5 years ago, Capitol Police recorded about 4,000 threats. But in 2021, the last full year we have statistics for, there were close to 10,000 threats. Last year, the U.S. Capitol Police opened 2 field offices, one in Florida, one in California, because of these heightened threats. They also added money for lawmakers' budgets this year to allow them to spend resources to upgrade their security systems, both in offices and in their homes where they're getting these threats. Lawmakers from both parties were pretty shooken up last night. Senate Majority Leader called the attack dastardly. The top Senate Republican, Mitch McConnell, called it horrific. And President Biden called on leaders from both parties to reject political violence last night. He's been in touch with the speaker to check on Mr. Pelosi.
NPR's Deidre Walsh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The richest man in the world now owns one of the most influential spaces for political and civil discourse.
It took months and a legal battle, but Elon Musk finalized his deal and took the reins.
So how will Twitter change under Musk, and what does it mean for speech online? We're joined by NPR tech reporter Bobby Allen. Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning.
So what changes have we seen at Twitter so far? It's just been a day, right?
Yeah, just about a day. Well, Elon came in and fired the CEO. He got rid of other upper management. He then tweeted, quote, "The bird is free," which apparently is a reference to Twitter's bluebird logo. Now, inside of Twitter, anxiety is running really high. I mean, Musk reportedly has considered laying off 75% of the staff. And, you know, that is something that he is now denying. But nonetheless, the mass layoff rumor has many Twitter employees on edge. In terms of changes to Twitter itself, we're just, as you mentioned, in the early innings of Twitter's Elon era. So it's kind of hard to say right now. But, you know, he's promised to relax rules against things like hate speech and harassment, unban controversial figures who've been kicked off the platform, and crack down on spam bots, to mention just three things he's suggested. He also said Friday that, you know, any major changes to the platform are going to be part of a long process, not done hastily.
So Pew Research says 23% of American adults are Twitter users. They're more likely to be under 30 and lean politically toward the left. So are those users going to see some big changes?
Well, Musk says he will not make any major content decisions or reinstate any accounts that have been suspended until he forms what he's calling a content moderation panel, which sounds a lot like Facebook's oversight board, which is far from popular. You know, at other points in recent months, Musk has said that, like I said, he's going to roll back these content moderation rules and somehow making sure that Twitter does not become what he called a free-for-all hellscape. So striking that balance is going to be no small feat. You know, we shall see how that goes. But already, you know, online safety groups, civil rights organizations, and others are really deeply worried that Musk is going to turn Twitter into a global stage for hate speech and disinformation. And if he does go that far, you might see a mass exodus of advertisers from Twitter. But right now, Musk is striking in, I think it's fair to say, an unusually even-handed tone in an attempt to kind of ease the fears of advertisers.
Well, I mean, certainly don't want a hellscape, I would think. But we'll see. People are already voting in the midterms. What about the political implications of a revamped Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that many misinformation researchers are thinking about right now. I mean, some of the most poisonous misinformation campaigns involve elected officials and election falsehoods. And look, whether bad actors try to manipulate the platform to achieve some kind of political ends remains to be seen, but malevolent forces would be trying to do this with or without Musk as boss, right? But I think the crucial question ahead of November is, are new content rules going to be released before the election? And, you know, how might that create an opening for disarray and chaos? And, you know, we'll be keeping a close eye on this.
Donald Trump was permanently banned from Twitter after the January 6th attack on Congress and the vice president. Musk has said that he would reinstate Trump's account. Have we heard from Trump?
We have. Trump took to his own social media site, Truth Social, and said that Twitter is now, quote, in sane hands. But, you know, whether Trump comes back is still up in the air, because Trump has also previously said that he doesn't want to come back to Twitter. He says he prefers Truth Social. But I'm skeptical that he won't return to Twitter, especially since he's publicly weighing another run for president. I mean, it's hard to see the rise of Trump without Twitter, right? It definitely helped shape him as a political animal, and it, you know, enabled him to find an enormous national fan base. Now, researchers have found that since Trump has been gone, disinformation on Twitter has declined in a statistically significant way. Will Trump return? Will Elon extend an invitation? Probably, but we're just not sure when exactly.
That's NPR's Bobby Allen. Bobby, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aisha.
In Brazil, it's the final stretch of what has become one of the country's dirtiest and most consequential presidential elections.
The choice for voters is distinct. The incumbent is a far-right populist whose pro-business administration has overseen massive destruction of the Amazon. The challenger is a leftist and himself a former president who is credited for raising millions out of poverty, but he's also spent time in prison for corruption.
NPR's Carrie Kahn is in Sao Paulo and has the latest on the campaign. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, good morning.
So voters go to polls in this final runoff on Sunday. What are you seeing there in Sao Paulo?
Polls show the race is very close, but polls have been problematic here. In the first round of voting earlier this month, the polls greatly underestimated the conservative support for the current president, Jair Bolsonaro. Since then, Bolsonaro, he's a former army captain and a Christian nationalist. He's really closed the gap even more. Former President Luis Inácio Lula da Silva is one of Latin America's most famous leftists, and he's still favored to win. And the campaign has just gotten more contentious and more dirty in recent days.
So what have these two men been campaigning on? Like, what are their closing arguments? You're saying it's getting really dirty. What's going on?
Last night was their final debate, and it was quite a free-for-all. The format was very dynamic. The two men are just on this big stage by themselves, and they just go at it for short blocks of time. Most of the time, they just, in these angry, high-pitched tones, called each other liars. I'm going to play you a little bit of that. Here's Da Silva attacking the incumbent over what he said was his abysmal record, erratic behavior, and lies.
Bolsonaro é o maior mentiroso da história do Brasil.
He's just saying that it's been reported that Bolsonaro is the biggest liar in the history of Brazil and that he's lied 6,498 times. Bolsonaro attacked Da Silva on corruption in his former administration. Da Silva was jailed for corruption. His conviction was later annulled. Here's a bit of Bolsonaro defending his stand on the world stage. Bolsonaro has come under much criticism for increased deforestation in the Amazon.
Pare de mentir, Lula. Estamos bem.
He says, here, stop lying, Lula. Everything is good here, and the world likes me better than they like you.
So he referenced the world there, and the world is watching this election very closely, given how important the Amazon is to the global ecosystem. So what are both candidates saying about the Amazon?
Official figures just show the deforestation has increased 73% in the first year since Bolsonaro took office. He's cut funding for enforcement against illegal loggers, cattle farmers, and fishermen. And Da Silva says he will return the rule of law to the region, protect indigenous lands, and create a ministry of native peoples. But the Amazon has not been a major campaign issue here. What has sucked up a lot more oxygen is dirty campaigning and fake news. Some examples are Bolsonaro falsely accuses Da Silva of being anti-religion and will turn Brazil communist a la Venezuela and Cuba. Da Silva's camp has capitalized on misstatements by Bolsonaro saying he supports cannibalism and pedophilia.
Oh, okay. Yes. So that is a quite nasty race. My goodness. Does that mean we should expect a messy conclusion to this race?
Bolsonaro has long questioned Brazil's electronic voting system, and recently he's been stepping up attacks against election officials who he says are biased against him. So there's a lot of concern about whether he will accept the outcome of the race.
That's NPR's Carrie Kahn in Sao Paulo. Thank you so much, Carrie.
You're welcome.
And that's Up First for Saturday, October 29th, 2022. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Aisha Roscoe. Andrew Craig, Samantha Balaban, Isabella Gomez-Sarmiento, Jan Stewart, and Hiba Ahmad produced this Saturday version of Up First.
Adil El-Shalchi, Ashley Lisenby, Ravenna Koenig, Melissa Gray, and Ed McNulty are our editors.
Our directors are Daniel Hensel and Michael Radcliffe. Alex Drewinskas and Hannah Glovna are the technical directors.
Evie Stone, our supervising editor. Sarah Lucy Oliver, our executive producer. And Jim Kane is our deputy managing editor.
And all those people also lend their talents to Weekend Edition. You know, hear more of that, what you found here and other stuff on the radio. Like, tune in.
Yeah, tune in every Saturday morning, for goodness sakes.
And on Sunday mornings, look up your NPR stations at stations.npr.org.